The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 172 of the Canes Cast, and you know what?
What's that?
First things are first.
And the Carolina Hurricanes are in first place in the Central Division as of the recording of this podcast on Wednesday, April 21st. Happy Wednesday to everybody. I would say hope you're enjoying a storm brew, and maybe by the time you're listening to this, you are enjoying a storm brew, but it's a little, I think, early for TV's Mike Maniscalco and I to be enjoying a storm brew. But hey, I still wish I was, because it's just 97 calories, it's just 2.4 carbs per serving, and it's the perfect brew for all occasions, even when it's before 9 a.m. in Fort Lauderdale on the beach.
If we're going to put all of our cards on the table, not that I've enjoyed a storm brew before 9 a.m. in my life, but there might have been a time in my life where, yeah, this wasn't too early.
Maybe put a little Bailey's in the coffee or something.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, who hasn't been there when it's those things? And by the way, R&D Brewing, which makes Storm Brew, they also make so many other great beverages like Seven Saturdays, if you're an IPA fan. Of course, the Riviera, which is their Mexican lager, that's an outstanding beer to drink as the weather gets a little bit warmer. We appreciate R&D because they appreciate Canes Cast as Storm Brew is the official beer sponsor of Canes Cast. And don't forget, Michael, as the weather gets warmer, I know that's when you enjoy a lovely seltzer or two that you can get from our good friends at R&D.
Yep. Perfect for the beach or the pool. And Storm Brew is perfect for Canes home games, where a 16-ounce can is just $5. That's a deal you can't beat. Thanks to our friends at R&D Brewing right here in Raleigh, North Carolina, for their support of the Hurricanes and, of course, this fine podcast that you all are enjoying.
Absolutely. And we hope that when you do enjoy responsibly, everyone. Michael, for the people who like to enjoy Canes Cast, as you mentioned, last week the sky was falling because the Carolina Hurricanes only got 1 point out of a possible four against the Detroit Red Wings before Carolina, they were able to right the ship. They're able to take two from the Nashville Predators and then get 3 out of 4 points on the road against the defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. So, as we like to, and for those of you who were watching the broadcast last night, you found out that Tripp Tracy enjoys a good hot tub and, quote, does some of his best work in a hot tub.
You know, I would ask you to explain that, but I think it's best just left as is.
No, I'm not going to, because that would have made me have to find out what exactly Tripp meant by that. And some things are either best left unsaid or to the imagination, Michael.
I would say this one is the former.
Yeah, and is best left unsaid. So yes. with that, when we get into the hot tub time machine for this, do you want to go all the way back to the Nashville Predators series?
Yeah, let's go all the way back to last week in the time machine and break that down. And really, I think one of the themes of this team this season, and I feel like we've talked about this on the podcast before, and it's going to come up a couple times on this podcast as well, is that the Hurricanes are just they're a resilient bunch. When you look at the responses they've had this season, whether it's been period to period or game to game, their ability to bounce back and come back with a better effort after not having their best has really been one of the keys for them being such a good team this season. When you look at that Detroit series, it obviously, wasn't what the Hurricanes had in mind. That's a team that you'd like to, in an ideal world, take 4 out of 4 from. But the Hurricanes were only able to get a point out of that. And of course, really one of their, probably the worst game of the season, and Jordan Staal's 1,000th game. But then the way they responded against a Nashville team that was red hot, had won 13 of their last 16 games, had surged into fourth place in the Central Division. The way they responded and really just controlled those two games, those two wins against Nashville was I think immensely impressive, and just said a lot about what you know, how that locker room is really able to take a previous result or a previous period, put it behind them, and come back with really some of their best hockey that we've seen.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think is worth noting is any time that the Hurricanes have had a losing skid this year or a losing streak, they've responded not just by stopping it, but by putting wins together after it. Remember, they had the three-game losing streak to Tampa, and that's who it was when the Canes played the four in a row against the Lightning. Then this club went on to rip off 8 wins in a row, a season best. They stubbed their toe a little bit earlier this year. They win 3 games in a row after losing 2 games in a row. They've only lost consecutive games 3 times this year. And every time they've done that, Michael, they've come back with a winning streak. So,
and they've only lost consecutive games in regulation once. And that was that 3-game losing streak to Tampa Bay. All the other, you know, losing streaks, if you want to call them that, the Hurricanes have been able to get points, whether it's in a shootout loss or in an overtime loss. So there's only been a stretch, only been one stretch this season where the Hurricanes have gone consecutive games without earning points. And that is, that's obviously the hallmark of a good team. But it's incredibly important too in this shortened season to have that ability to not let not let a slide snowball into something bigger. And so for the Hurricanes to be able to bounce back and record points on a regular basis has really been one of the chief reasons why they're in first place in the Central Division right now.
Yeah, I'm not a super stat head, but just to break it out for everybody, Canes lost 3 in a row on February 20th to the 24th, or to the 25th, actually, is when the third loss happened to Tampa. Then they go on an 8-game winning streak that stretches from February 27th to March 14th. Then they have a 3-game winless streak. They got points in 2 overtime losses against the Columbus Blue Jackets and, ironically, lost to the Detroit Red Wings that kicked off the losing streak. So then the Canes come back and win 3 in a row. And now we come off of the 2-game schneid against the Detroit Red Wings, and the Hurricanes, not only do they win 2 games in a row against Nashville, they win 3 out of 4, throwing in the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the hallmark of good teams is they don't go on extended losing streaks. And when they do have a losing streak, they back it up with wins. And that's what this club does. And you use the word resilient, and I think we've used it about 3,000 times on the broadcast this year. And I think I'm going light by saying we said 3,000. But that's what this club is. And I go back to something that Rod Brind'Amour said in a postgame, Michael, and I cannot remember the life of me for which game it was, but I know that the Canes didn't have a great outing, but there was a third period comeback. And he goes, this team doesn't worry. They don't, he goes, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I don't, the exact word wasn't worry, but he's like, they don't kind of realize, well, we're down 2 goals or we're up 2. They just like, okay, we'll go out and we'll score some goals. Those are the teams that are the hallmark of doing something great, because they don't play to the scoreboard. They just keep playing the game. They keep playing what they need to do. And that's what they did against the Predators. You know, you can let 2 losses to the Detroit Red Wings sidetrack your season for 4 or 5 games as you try to come out of a funk. And stop me if you think I'm making excuses, because this team doesn't make excuses. But I might have a bit of an explanation, and we could have gotten a little bit more into this after those Detroit games last week on the podcast. But those 2 losses, 1, the Canes scored 4 goals in the overtime loss to Detroit. And then when they lose on Monday on Jordan Staal's 1,000th game, you know, not the best effort of the season that the Carolina Hurricanes have, losing that 3-1 game. And I know I'm going back to last week, but that game was still available to be won in the third period, despite everyone to a man saying it was their worst game of the year. But here's the observation I have now with more time to reflect on it. That's 2 days before the trade deadline, when they lose the overtime game to Detroit. And then it's the trade deadline and Jordan Staal's 1,000th game on Monday when they lose outright to Detroit. So I think it would be fair to say, even though it shouldn't, and they'll tell you it shouldn't matter, that maybe there were some pressing things on players' minds other than the Detroit Red Wings. It should be the Detroit Red Wings. The laser-like focus should be on them. But I think some guys were thinking about the trade deadline, which is perfectly natural. Am I going to be here? Am I not going to be here? And then you go through it, and now it's, okay, what do we do now once the trade deadline is over and you have the celebration for Jordan Staal? But, and I will keep going back to this, for the Canes, they're human. These things pop into it. For Detroit, there was no pressure. Detroit knew guys were moving in and moving out on the weekend. Detroit knows that they're not making the playoffs. So that was a weekend where, I know it sounds odd, but for the teams who are out of it, the pressure is on the teams that are in it. And that's where they start to focus on everything else. So that's why I didn't think that the losses to Detroit were anything more than what they were. You know, just that, and sometimes you can reset. And you said it last week, if you're going to give up points to a team that's not going to catch you in the standings, even though it allows breathing room for Florida to, you know, jump back into a first place tie. It gave Tampa the opportunity to, you know, as they've been kind of in a bit of a skid, to keep them at least within striking distance of the Canes. So that explains that. But then they come back with those two performances against Nashville. Hello, Yanni Hakanpaa.
Yeah. Welcome to Raleigh.
What a good addition. Exactly what the team wanted. Full marks right now to the scouting staff and the front office that identified we needed a right shot defenseman who plays with some snarl. And, oh, by the way, he is hopefully the next Nicky Vallin, which is the secret weapon, scoring goals when you need him to, because his first goal as a Cane is his first ever game-winning goal, as it turns out to be, against Nashville. But he's fitting quite well. And those were two really good performances and maybe the best first period we've seen from the Carolina Hurricanes ever. I mean, other than putting in only one goal,
right?
Where, okay, good UC Saros, we tip the cap to you, the Nashville netminder. That's as dominant of a first period as you're ever going to see a team play against another team in the NHL this year.
Yeah, that, and that's just, you know, the fact that the Hurricanes were only up 1-0 just kind of goes to show you how hockey can be sometimes. It's
you can fickle mistress.
Yeah, exactly. It's you can dominate a period and only come away with a goal. And the Hurricanes were really almost 2 minutes away from not even beating UC Saros at all, and it being just a 0-0 game. Again, I think that's also a credit to the Hurricanes' ability to just not let anything rattle them, not let the fact that, okay, UC Saros is playing really well and we're throwing just about everything we have at them. They didn't let that take them off their game plan. They didn't try to get cute or anything like that. It was, you know, when you look at that goal that Jacob Slavin scored in transition, simple, just laying the puck off. Slavin's shot was a good shot, and it beat UC Saros clean, and that's that. The Hurricanes didn't try to do anything extra, you know, even though things weren't falling their way in terms of the scoreboard. Everything else was falling their way. They were completely dominating the Predators. They just weren't seeing those tangible results on the scoreboard, and that's obviously what you want to see. That's why it's the ultimate goal of the game. But when you look at those two performances, it's exactly the type of response you wanted to see from this team. You had, when you look back at that 4-1 win on the 15th, you had a late first period goal from Warren Fogle. You had an early second period goal from Andrei Svechnikov. Those are two that can really help shift the momentum in your direction, scoring late in a period, scoring early in a period. You mentioned the Slavin goal in that next game for the Hurricanes to really, you know, escape that first period, really their best period of the season, with some tangible results. And then Yanni Hakanpaa in the third period. Again, just a simple play. You know, Trocheck telling him, hey, I'm going to win this face-off right back to you. And he lets go of a wrist shot that you know, Alex Nedeljkovic pointed out after the game that as a goaltender, those are hard to read because they're coming through traffic. You don't have really the sound signature of the slap shot, you know, the stick off the ice. So it's kind of tough to tell when the shot is let go, where it's going, tough to track. So a well-placed shot by Hakanpää, and really just a very much a welcome to Raleigh party for him in his second game in a Hurricane sweater. And that was a great way to cap the longest homestand of the season. And the Hurricanes finish with a 5-2-1 record in the homestand and hit the road for what is a critical road trip and remains now two games into these six games on the road remains a very critical road trip. And it began with taking 3 out of 4 points against the defending Stanley Cup champions, a team that, as we mentioned, 2 months ago, the Hurricanes lost 3 straight to, and they come back. And again, there's that response. There's that resiliency. They come back and they take 3 out of 4, against the defending Stanley Cup champions in Tampa Bay.
Oh, I know that some people will point out that Tampa Bay didn't have Steven Stamkos or Nikita Kucherov in these two games, which is fair.
That is true.
We're talking about two of the best offensive players, not just for Tampa Bay, but in the league. But the Carolina Hurricanes have also been playing without Teuvo Teravainen and one of their best defensive forwards in Brock McGinn. So this two-game series was everything I wanted it to be. It's a way to close out the 8-game regular season set, because these two teams will not play again until the playoffs. And I'm going to say this as a fan of hockey, fingers crossed we get this in the second round of the NHL postseason, because these games, especially these last two in Tampa, have everything that you want in a matchup between two teams. And I hope both teams are healthy. You know, I really do. Like, I hope Nikita Kucherov is ready to go and going to play for Tampa. I hope Stamkos is there. I hope Teravainen is there, because I want best on best for this. I don't want there to be any excuses that come through when this happens. Now, that said, the Canes, how they played, and you can go back to the first game of this one on Monday night, where they dig themselves a 2-0 hole and find a way to get a point. And again, that's one of those games where you're not going to be your best for 60 straight minutes. You're not. There's going to be a shift somewhere where either the other team is better than you, or you come off your game a little bit. That's just the way that hockey is. But this was a game where, if you watched, the Canes were not at their best, but they were still able to keep themselves in the game. And it goes back to what they've done all year, that they find a way to have pockets. And remember, and we still hear it this year, Michael, from Rod Brind'Amour. And it's true. You can't play 40 minutes against a team and expect to win. You can't, you know, you have to try to be your best all the time. Well, now the Canes are the team in the other position where if you only play 40 minutes against the Carolina Hurricanes, they're going to beat you. Now they don't get the win, but they do get the point. But that game featured a couple of things that don't sit well with Canes fans, and I don't blame them. The big one is the Alex Killorn hit on Marty Natchez as the Canes were trying to gain a power play entry. I have gone back and forth on this. I don't know how much you've looked at it. It's a hit. I'm not going to go down the lines and say, oh, that's the most egregious thing I've ever seen, because I think, you know, physical play is part of the NHL. It's a collision sport still. But that's one of those ones where I'm like, you know, player safety is a big deal. This is where the players have to kind of police themselves. And I know Killorn's trying to get a big hit and fire up his teammates. When I watch the hit, the initial contact, Killorn doesn't leave his skates on the initial hit. And for anybody who's ever played a contact or a collision sport where you hit people, your body's natural tendency, and I hate getting into physics and all of this, is to rise up when you make a hit.
Yep.
The things I didn't like about the hit, though, is, you know, one, Natchez is put in a tough spot trying to receive that pass. Killorn sees it, knows it's coming, trying to time it. Is there a way where you can finish through the chest and maybe not come up? Okay, that's fine. But my problem with Killorn was you hit a player, he's hurt, and then you get into a fight with Jake Gardner, and I stick taps for Jake Gardner for going, okay, I'm going to go in here and try to, you know, make up for, you know, this big hit on a player where, you know, it was Gardner's pass to Natchez.
Yeah.
But then Killorn going to the box and doing the let's make some noise cheer. A guy's hurt. And I understand that Killorn might have some adrenaline going through him after that. But that's the one thing. The thing in that game that the hit on Natchez that didn't sit well with me was the Eric Chernak elbow to Natchez coming along the boards.
Right.
Where Natchez is going to play a puck. Chernak takes a peek, sees Natchez coming. And I know that as a player, you need to defend yourself, but there's a difference between defending yourself and bringing an elbow up to a guy's chin.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the one that kind of just the Killorn hit because it's a highlight move, gets all of the attention where the Chernak play to me, I think can actually be more dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree with your assessment of it. I didn't think it was a particularly dirty hit.
No.
It was heavy and
yes.
It was physical and it was violent. And obviously you hate to see what happened to Marty Natchez, but at the same time then, you know, it was great to see him back on the ice after that hit.
Yep.
I think he was a little sore yesterday, but
oh, sure.
No worse for wear otherwise, which was the good thing. But you know what? That's a little peek of what a playoff series between these two teams is going to be like. It's going to be physical. It's going to be emotional. It's going to be a battle. And give the Hurricanes, you know, high marks for, you know, matching and exceeding the Lightning in many of those areas. I think when you look at, you know, just how physical that game was, kind of underscores the importance of adding both Cedric Paquette and Yanni Hakanpää to the Hurricanes lineup. Yeah. Because now the Hurricanes can, you know, without those two in the lineup, maybe they're not as physical. With those two in the lineup, you know, those are some deterrents, I think, and some guys who can match the physicality of somebody like Alex Killorn. Or a Pat Maroon or really, you know, name anybody on their defense because everyone seems to be about 6'2" or taller on their defense. So, I kind of agree with your assessments there, but that just, it was a really fun, you know, from my perspective, at least watching it, set of games between two of the best teams in the NHL, and for the Hurricanes to, you know, to play a game that admittedly they weren't at their best on Monday night, but still have a chance to win the game. You know, Andrei Svechnikov brought him within a goal on the power play in the second period. Brady Shea, again, we talk early goals, ties it up early in the third period. And the Hurricanes, even though they weren't at their best for really those first two periods, are in a tie game in the third period against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Jordan Staal has puck on his stick with a grade A chance to win it in overtime and just can't bury the shot. But that, to me, is one of the big takeaways, is that even when this team you know, isn't at their best, they're still right there. They're still right there against one of the other better teams in the league. And then what I think you saw the next night on Tuesday was kind of a role reversal.
Yep.
The Hurricanes were on and the Tampa Bay Lightning weren't. And one of the big differences I think there is that the Lightning were never really in that game. The first period was kind of was kind of blow for blow. It was pretty even. The Hurricanes got off to a big start. They had 8 shots the first 5 minutes or something. But then the Lightning got a power play and they started putting some shifts together. Alex Nedeljkovic made a huge point blank stop on Ryan McDonough.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you look back at it, maybe was one of the biggest saves of the game, because that's a scoreless first period instead of a 1-0 lead for the Lightning. But then really after that first period, the Hurricanes took control of the game. Nino Niederreiter getting the Hurricanes on the board first, and then just the whole sequence too. So it's Nino Niederreiter scores, then Jordan Staal scores 25 seconds later. But in between that, Jordan Martinook drops the gloves with Barclay Goodrow. Both players landed a solid right. And that was one of those things where, again, it I think got a response from the Canes bench that, hey, you know, this is Jordan Martinook kind of dragged his guys into the battle. And then Jordan Staal did the same thing, standing in front of the net and taking the abuse from Yanni Gourde and just, you know, not even being bothered by it, shrugging it off and getting a stick on Dougie Hamilton's point shot.
That was a world-class tip, by the way.
Yes, because he's stumbling and he's still able to get a stick on it.
Although if you go back and watch that, to your point, that's where, folks, you need to realize how big of a man Jordan Staal is.
Yes.
Yanni Gourde is cross-checking him. And it looked at one point like he was headbutting him, just trying to get any reaction out of him. And it's like when a bigger brother is with a little brother, or the varsity plays the JV, it's like, what? Okay, I'm just going to go here and do this. And that's a good example. I honestly, Michael, you just laid that out perfectly. And the two goals in 25 seconds where Nino Niederreiter gets a point, by the way, gets the goal on a great setup from Vincent Trocheck. And then he's in on the assist for Jordan Staal, the captain's 14th of the season, who, by the way, Selke Award nominee, Jordan Staal. I'm calling it right now. That's not even a like it, keep it. I'm just calling it right now.
I'll take it just for the record.
Yeah, thank you. Can I do a PSA for a second? And I want to go back to Monday's game about big hits.
Sure, PSA. Okay. The more you know, NBC. Or CBS.
It was NBC.
NBC, okay.
The more you know.
CBS is CBS Cares.
Yes, and then knowing is half the battle, G.I. Joe. So if the uniforms were different, and that was Brock McGinn, Cedric Paquette, who, by the way, Cedric Paquette had a huge hit last night on Victor Hedman.
Yes, not easy to do because Victor Hedman, we talk about big human beings.
Wow.
Massive human being.
He's why I believed the Vikings were able to take over the world in the 1600s. Well, yeah,
if they all looked like him, yes.
Yeah. How are you stopping that? Good luck.
It's striking, and I'm sure if anybody has seen Victor Hedman in person on skates, I mean, it's just it's a marvel that he's one able to move like he can.
Yes.
When he's that big, and it's just it's impressive. He's a big human being.
Yes, he is. Zdeno Chara, Victor Hedman, two people that you look at, and then you say we're going to put you on skates, okay? but here's the PSA: if the uniforms were different, and it was a Carolina Hurricanes player, and I should have addressed this before we moved on to last night's game, if a Carolina Hurricanes player hits a Tampa Bay Lightning player like that, do you, without a doubt in your mind, think that that is a bad hit? No, you think it's a good hit because your team did it. And this isn't – I hate doing this because it sounds like we're scolding and chiding and admonishing fans. I'm not doing that. I just think when plays like that happen, hits are part of the game. And when it happens to your team, you hate seeing it. You don't want to see your players get hit, in particular if it leads to a player being hurt.
Right,
I think that's the tough thing, where you see Natchez on the ground and you're not sure he's on the ice. You're not sure if he's all right or not.
Yeah.
But if you see your team do it to the opposition, that's one of the things. If that hit happens at PNC Arena and the Canes, and it has happened at PNC Arena by the Canes to the opposition, it gets fans out of the seats. It gets a loud roar, that loud roar. So if it was, and I hope that people who tune into this podcast understand that if Michael Smith and I thought it was a dirty hit, we would be the first two people telling you that it was a dirty hit. But we both love hockey. We love the game. We understand that's a part of it. So I just ask, on a play like that, where it's a 50-50 play, if the roles are reversed, you're going to be on the side of it was a good hit.
Yeah, and that's what I always try to do when I'm observing the game and certain calls happen and I see fans react a certain way. I try I think it's healthy to kind of reverse the roles and think, okay, how would I look at this if the roles were reversed? And I think you're exactly right in this case. Yes, it's obviously you don't want to see a player hurt in for either team in the game. But, it's not just because a player gets hurt doesn't mean it's a dirty hit or an illegal hit. It was, by the rule book, a very textbook hit in a lot of ways. But the fact that Natchez got hurt is obviously the thing you don't like to see for either team. But again, it was good to see him come back in the game. But you do make a good point. Yeah. It's a good, I think, mental exercise to take a certain play in the game that you might not like or might not agree with the assessment, and then reverse the roles and try to think about what you would think then. And for sure, if it was Cedric Paquette lining up Braden Point in the neutral zone, and that happens, it's a totally good hit. And then maybe he has to fight afterwards. Maybe someone challenges him and he has to fight. And that's it's all part of the game. It's all part of the game. And yes, if it was an illegal hit or a bad hit, like the one Blake Coleman,
thank you,
delivered to Brady Shea, because that is, you're coming from a distance. At no point do you not see Brady Shea's name and number. You never see the logo.
Yeah,
you're looking at Shea 76. You see his back.
That's all you see. Time. Yeah.
And, the difference there is Killorn's obviously looking at the front of Natchez the whole time. That hit was bad, should have been a penalty, probably should be disciplined after the fact, but won't be, as Rod Brindamore said. And now you're dealing with a player in Brady Shea who might have a concussion because he did miss the rest of the game last night. After that hit was delivered, he did try to come back and play a shift in the second period. And I did see him, after the game on the plane, on the bus, he said he was feeling better. So that's a good sign. But again, these things are unpredictable, as we've seen with Teuvo Teravainen. And it's just that's a hit that you don't want to see. That's a hit that doesn't belong in the game.
And that's kind of more to my point. And I'm glad you bring up Brady Shea, because what happened 60 seconds into the bubble in the playoffs, Michael? Brady Shea absolutely lights up Jesper Fast, and I can assure you that no Canes fan was like, well, that's a penalty on Brady Shea. It's just and I think when you see how violent hits can be and then the reaction to them, and that Brady Shea felt bad because Jesper Fast was done for the rest of that series because of the hit, but it wasn't a dirty hit.
Right.
There are things with being physical, and I'm reminded of a saying, which is you can hit to hurt, meaning I'm going to hit you, you're going to know I'm here, and it's going to hurt you to get to the front of the net, or you hear it in football. We're going to hit you and it's going to hurt, so you're not going to want to come across the middle anymore to try to catch a pass, things like that, just using another analogy. Then there are guys who hit to injure, and the hits to injure are the dirty plays. That's the Chernak bringing his elbow up on Natchez earlier in that game along the boards. That's Coleman shoving Brady Shea where he doesn't see the front of the Canes jersey that Shea is wearing. He sees the numbers and the nameplate and then shoves them into the boards head first. That's hitting to injure. And people might disagree with that. Well, sometimes along the boards, if you're hitting somebody whose back is turned to you into the boards, you're hitting them to injure them. Not a, hey, I'm here and I'm going to be here all kind of day kind of thing. That is I'm hitting to injure you. And those are the hits that the players have to find a way to take it out of the game, police themselves. And I'll keep going back to this. It'll never happen, but you want to take out hits and cheap shots and headshots. You lose a game and you lose a game check. not a $5,000 fine. You lose a game check. And right. I promise you, you will see a lot of the dirty stuff. And that's in every sport where you think that there's, you know, some foul play that can happen here or there. You will see players kind of clean it up a lot more. I'm not saying that those hits will never happen, but like you said, Michael, it's a good exercise to go on both sides of this. The Coleman hit, I hope something comes of it. We probably won't know until later today after the recording of this podcast. And I'm with you, and I'm with the head coach of the Hurricanes. Highly doubt anything's going to come of it.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part. But hopefully Brady Shea is, you know, feels better today. No practice today on Wednesday. It's an off day for the Hurricanes. So we won't really know much more until Thursday morning, the morning of an important two-game set against the Florida Panthers, which I think is the perfect transition to talking about another big two-game set between two teams that both have 65 points in the standings. Now, the important part for the Hurricanes is that they have two games in hand. So they remain in first place by virtue of that points percentage, or really just games played when you think about it. But this is a big two games because it's a team that, like Tampa Bay, is challenging the Hurricanes for first place in the division. And this road trip, I think, just because of the teams you're playing against, is going to go a long way in determining how the standings shake out at the end of the season. So I have this for you.
Ooh.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
The Hurricanes will finish in first place in the Central Division.
First off, I'm a little stunned.
It's the energy from the Atlantic Ocean.
You feed off of the coasts. Yeah, I'm going to take it. I think the Canes win the Central Division. And the reason being is how they played all year long has given me absolutely no reason to doubt it. The goaltending is solid. They will at some point get Teuvo Teravainen back before this year is over. They'll get Brock McGinn back. But the funny thing is, look at how this roster is playing right now. If you're Rod Brind'Amour, you're going to have, and this is a good thing, you're going to have some hard roster decisions to make about what your lineup is going to look like. Of course, I think the sooner you can get Teuvo Teravainen back in the lineup, the better, because there's 11 games remaining for the Carolina Hurricanes. So if you can get him, I think ideally if you could get him anywhere between 8 to 10 games, and this is, I'm saying that as that would be the sweet spot to get him ready for the playoffs. I have no idea, because it's a concussion we're talking about with Teravainen, a bad one. And he has to be the one who feels comfortable playing. And I don't ever blame a player who's dealing with concussion symptoms for playing it as safe as they possibly can, because we're talking about not just your career, not just a season. We're talking about your life after this. So if you get him back, the Canes now add a weapon. The number one power play in the National Hockey League gets even better, because you look at the two power play units the Canes will have, and that becomes a pick your poison opposition. Who's gonna beat you? And the odds are both of them will. So yeah, I'll absolutely take it. Well done, Michael.
So a little ancillary discussion to that then. How do you see the rest of the Central Division shaking out? Right now, as of recording this podcast on Wednesday, April 21st, Carolina sits in first. Florida's in second place. Tampa Bay's in third. And Nashville is holding on to fourth, but Dallas is creeping up the standings.
And Dallas has two games in hand on the Nashville Predators.
And they're just a point behind them.
Yeah, I'm going to go. The order right now is Carolina, Florida, Tampa, Nashville, and Dallas. By the way, Chicago, thank you for, at the start of the year, I tried to call you a dark horse team. I apologize that I jumped off of the dark horse, but thank you for once again letting me know that my first instinct is always right. they're fading out of it. I'm going to say that it'll be the Dallas Stars who creep in, and they'll get the fourth spot. They're not going to – Nashville and Dallas, nobody is jumping into the third spot and knocking –
No.
One of the Florida teams out of that. No. Notice I say Florida teams because I don't think that the Canes will be in any danger of that. So give me, I'll go reverse order. Dallas will finish in fourth. The Florida Panthers will finish in third. The Tampa Bay Lightning will finish in second, and the Carolina Hurricanes win the Central Division.
There you go.
So, although I really, I think if you're Florida and Tampa at that point, it doesn't matter, you know, flip-flopping who's in second, who's in third. It's really just more for, you know, the sake of discussion.
Yeah, and the big benefit there for the Hurricanes would be that they don't have to go through both of those teams. They'll just have to face one of them, assuming they can beat Dallas, who I'm kind of in agreement with you. I think they're, I hesitate to say this, but I think they are finally starting to maybe figure it out and not just yo-yo, do the roller coaster 500 kind of thing. Their goal differential is plus 17. It's
damn you, because I was going to steal the great thing that you brought up before we podcast, which was the Stars have a plus goal differential. The Predators have a minus. And I think it's something like 95% of the playoff teams are, or probably even be more than that, have a plus goal differential. And I just find it hard for Nashville, especially how they've overcome all of their injuries to go on that run and get to this point. But they have some serious injuries. The Stars have some serious injuries, but they're getting a little bit, you know, healthier than what they've been. I just think that plus goal differential, the Stars have more firepower than the other teams beneath them in Nashville. So I think they'll get in.
And that, you know, again, when you go back and talk about the importance of this six-game road trip, and you face two teams that are directly challenging you for first place, and getting points against them is a way to kind of, you know, keep them at bay. A
little buffer zone.
Yeah, and then you face a team that is charging into a playoff spot. So it's a critical stretch of hockey for the Hurricanes before the playoffs, a playoff-type stretch for the Hurricanes before they get into the real thing. And so far, you know, through the first third of this road trip, I would have to say the Hurricanes have certainly started it off on the right foot with 3 of 4 against the defending Stanley Cup champions. And now another two big ones on Thursday and Saturday against the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and we'll touch on that for a second, but I have a like it, keep it, which is complimentary to what you just said. The Hurricanes and Lightning have played all 8 games in the regular season this year, but that wasn't the last time we're going to see the Tampa Bay Lightning and Carolina Hurricanes play this year. Like it, keep it.
Yep, I will. I'll take that for sure. For the sake, as you said earlier, for the sake of hockey fans, just looking at the 8 games that the two teams played against each other all year, I mean, it was entertaining hockey, and I could totally go for a 7-game series between those two teams, because I think that series could be one that goes 6 or 7. And, you know, is just a battle the whole way. I'm going to take that. I think that's from looking at it at the start of the season, you kind of said, okay, that could be a second round matchup for sure. And that's, I think, that'll decide who comes out of the Central and heads to the Stanley Cup semifinals.
Yeah. The other thing about the series, I think the goals were, the Canes scored 20 goals in the series. Tampa scored 17. In the records, both teams got 4 wins. In the records were 4-3-1 for both teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it was some really good hockey and some great goaltending. And sign me up for 7 games of that. Also, the 2 games coming up, I don't want to try and go into the bluster of, well, this will decide the division. But I think if the Canes, which, remember, we talked about nobody's going to beat a team 8 times this year. Well, it's happened a few places. It's happened up in the North Division, and I'm pretty sure somebody's, maybe 2 or 3 teams will do that to the Buffalo Sabres in the East Division.
Well, there are no rules in the North Division.
Oh yeah, that's a and no defense, no defense as well.
That's correct. It's just pond hockey up there.
Exactly.
And then the Sabres, I don't know if anybody could have foreseen that sort of season they've
had. Yeah, that's well, kind
of. I'll call it a season.
Yeah, well, they played games and they had uniforms, so yeah, it'll go down those lines. But yeah, they, you know, it's funny, they kind of have now become, they could be that like thorn in the side that everybody thought would be whatever and steal points away from somebody. But I, back to my point here on this series with the Panthers, I hesitate to say things like that this decides the division, but I think that this can knock the Florida Panthers out of winning the Central Division if the Canes continue their dominance and win the two games against Florida.
Yeah,
coming up on Thursday and Saturday.
And Florida and Tampa Bay end the season by playing against each other.
Yeah.
So that could decide the 2-3, really. It's going to be a fascinating race down the stretch of the season. I mean, really, it's the race for 1-2-3 in the Central. Because I do think you still have to keep, you know, Tampa in that mix. You know, they could easily surge up a couple of spots. And then it's the race for fourth. I do think the Hurricanes are going to end up winning the division, which would be the first time that they've won a division since the 05-06 season. But
that ended pretty well, if you refresh my memory on that, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was a trophy and a
couple of banners that got raised.
Yeah, big celebration, big party, maybe a parade.
Yeah.
I think that all happened.
Sure.
We've got a couple of voicemails.
And we've got a couple of tweets as well.
Excellent. We'll start with the voicemails. And a reminder, if you have a question or a comment for the show, you can give us a call at any time. It's 919-500-7819. You can dial that up really whenever you're feeling like you might – want to ask us a question or scold us for, you know, bad takes that we might have. I don't think we have any.
I'm going to say that's going to be a phone call that never comes.
That's correct. But at any time, give us a ring. 919-500-7819.
Hey, Mike and Michael, it's Chris from CT. Just want you to know, 5 stars, bro. Take it easy.
5 stars, best friends.
For life.
Yeah. Those are the rules.
We don't. Well, no, we did make them. So, yeah.
Did make them.
So.
We make them and we enforce them.
All right. We got another call to get to.
Hey, guys. Mike O'Neill calling from Raleigh here. Just wanted to see what your thoughts are on how Ned is done in the net. Is he maybe getting some consideration to at least be in the Calder Cup race? And what you think the goalie situation is going to shake up like after the season? Thanks. Have a good day, guys. Keep up. 5 stars. Best friends.
Wow. A second straight 5-star best friend review. Love it. Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, this is a great topic of discussion, I think. Alex Nedeljkovic and his shot at potential Calder Trophy consideration. I think he totally should be considered for the Calder Trophy. Just look at his stats, and we can talk about his stats if you'd like to talk about them, because they're pretty good.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, I have no problem talking about his stats. Just when you take a look at a 1.87 goals against average, the fact that he's got a 932 save percentage, and I mean, 11-4-2 when it comes to the overtime losses, that's right up there with anybody else. I don't know if 17 games, because that's how many he has played, would be enough to venture him to be a serious threat for the award, but I think he'll be a nominee. He'll get votes. And he deserves it. The only problem is Kirill Kaprizov got off to such an unbelievable start for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
He's all anybody was talking about. We're going to see another guy who I think is going to be a Calder Trophy finalist, and that's Jason Robertson of the Dallas Stars.
Yep.
He's had a really good rookie campaign. But just running down the list of rookies this year, Alex Nedeljkovic deserves – to have that credit and the consideration to be in that final three. I don't know if he will, Mike.
Yeah.
But I think that how he's played and his numbers have at least bared out the voters should give him a look for it, or at least cast him a couple of votes to be one of the rookie of the year. I think he's going to be the rookie goaltender of the year when it's all said and done.
I mean, you make a good point about games played. I don't know if the league, and Tampa Bay is the exception, I think, right now. I don't know if the league is a true number one goaltender league anymore. At least it hasn't been for the Hurricanes haven't operated, really with that system in a few years now. They've leaned heavily into a sort of 1A, 1B rotation. Tampa Bay, obviously, Andre Vasilevsky, he's their number one guy. He plays the lion's share, the big cat.
He's had 36 appearances this year.
Yeah.
And look at you staying in the feline community.
He plays a lot of games. But since the Hurricanes don't necessarily use that same philosophy when it comes to goaltending, you have Alex Nedeljkovic, who I don't know if you can say he's commanded the net this season, just because they have the Hurricanes have rotated between Peter Mrazek and James Reimer early in the season. And then, of course, Peter Mrazek got hurt, so Nedeljkovic became part of that rotation with James Reimer. It does look like Nedeljkovic is maybe becoming a bigger part of the rotation now, even with Peter Mrazek back healthy. So I do think it's at least worth talking about. Kaprizov and Robertson are two rookies that have, have impressed. And when you think about trophies and awards, it's a lot of attention, is given to the guys who score goals and put points up. But I do think it's at least... we can at least have the discussion about Calder chances.
Well, I think he should be one of the three finalists just based on just pure numbers. Like, his goaltending numbers, Michael, are up there with everybody else's in the National Hockey League who are in the top five of consideration for winning awards. So the only thing is that award generally goes to a forward who scores a lot of points. And again, the tough thing for Nedeljkovic on this one, where maybe he loses some of the consideration, and I just go with it, is the games played. He's not the number one goaltender for the Hurricanes. I don't think the Canes have a number one goaltender and they're fine with it, because I think they're comfortable with all three goalies that they have.
Yep.
So, but it's a good question. Good discussion. Yep. So
we've got some Twitter questions.
Oh, we do, Michael.
All right, let's get to them.
All right. This is from Holland. I'm not sure if it's from the region, the Dutch, if you will.
Yeah.
But what are your first impressions on Big Yanni? I believe that's Hakanpaa. All of them are positive for me. He's everything that this team wanted him to be. He brings balance to the defensive core on that 5-6 pairing. So now you have three right-handed shots, three left-handed shots. I love that he is going to, if you come into the Hurricanes end, he's going to hit you. Yes. He'll hit you in the neutral zone. He'll hit you in the offensive zone. But I also think, you read scouting reports or you see things and you look at his numbers and you're kind of like, well, not much offense is coming out of this guy. But that's not why the Canes traded for him. He's not afraid to jump into the rush. He's had a chance jumping in front of the netminder. His shot that beat Saros, but that was the game winner in his second game with the Canes. That's a good shot. I mean, and he just let it fly. As he said, and you chronicled it, Trocheck goes, I'm winning the draw, so let her rip. And it's going to you. And he did. So he fits in really good. And while we don't have the storm surges we've seen in the past, if they ever do the Thor hammer again, Brock McGinn, I'm sorry, you might have to step to the side, because this man looks like Thor.
Yeah, it's a better casting choice, I think.
Just throwing that out there. Anything else you want to add on Yanni Hakanpaa's impressions?
I think you hit him all. I mean, in the locker room, he seems like a very nice guy. I think he's, you know, settling into his new surroundings. It helps that he sits beside Sebastian Aho in the locker room. Aho is someone he played with in Karpat in Finland in 2015-16. They trained together in the offseason or have before. So that familiarity, I think, is good when you're obviously coming across the country to a new team.
All right. This question from Alan Gunn. With the top three in the division solidified, make a case for who gets the fourth spot and who would you rather the Canes face, a 1-4 matchup or a 2-3 matchup? I'd always rather be the 1-4 matchup because I'd want to have home ice advantage all the way through that. So that's
correct. And that puts you in a better position than two to have home ice through the entire playoffs. So yeah, for sure. 1-4. I mean, for the Hurricanes, I think they probably match up better with Nashville. I think they would be fine against Dallas. In either case, I think the Hurricanes win a series.
Well, I think we made the case that it's going to be Dallas who gets that. This from Kate Merrill, going a little bit further into the playoffs. Which teams do you think are coming out of the four divisions to compete for the Stanley Cup? All right.
That's an interesting question.
Let's get the bias out of the way. I think the Hurricanes are coming out of the Central Division.
Yeah, I do too. I think it doesn't really matter who comes out of the North because they're going to lose, but I'll say Winnipeg.
I'll say Winnipeg as well.
Coming out of the North. The East is an interesting one.
I've got two teams.
Washington.
Yep.
And Boston?
Pittsburgh.
Mm. And Washington might have to play Boston in the first round.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Islanders have to play Pittsburgh, and the Islanders have sort of had Pittsburgh's number the last few years. But if I keep going back and forth on that one, I think Washington's going to come out of the East Division just because all of the firepower they have up front. And I like Peter Laviolette. When he gets to a team, he gets everything out of them right away. And I think that this Caps team kind of knows that the window is almost completely closed on them winning another cup. But this is their maybe best last chance to do it. So I like Washington. And then the West is the one for me. You could pick any day of the week and I could change between Vegas and Colorado.
Yeah.
But Kate wants an answer today.
I'm going to say Colorado.
I'll say Colorado, but I wonder if the problems that they're dealing with now with COVID-19 complications, Michael, takes anything out of them heading into the playoffs, even though we only have 3 weeks of the season left.
Selfishly, I'll say Colorado because I've always wanted to see a playoff series between the Hurricanes and the Avs, at least for these last couple of years, because every time they get together, I think they play a similar style of game. I think they're both quick. That would be, again, you talk about entertaining 7-game series, Hurricanes Lightning. I think Hurricanes Avs would be awesome.
This one, we're going to need a little bit of a help from our sound effects that all of our fans like as we read on the reviews. I think they got the first star for Tuesday night's game wrong. That win had to go to...
This is Bill Bernstein coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
From the Canes locker room, of course. Thank you. That had his fingerprints all over it. He might need to be the special guest on the next Canes cast. Canes cast is always open for Bill Bernstein. And by the way, that is from Howie Handorf. Howie, I appreciate you letting Michael and I play that drop. And second, I don't know if there is a tinge of sarcasm there, but I'll take the tinge out of it. That's a really good comment because of you look at the job that Bill Bernstein and head athletic trainer Doug Bennett and all of the assistants and the head coaches have done to keep the assistant coaches, the head coaches, there's only one head coach, what Rod Brind'Amour, what Jeff Daniels, what Dean Chenault have done to get this team ready night in, night out, to keep them prepared during the season. But the guys really behind the scenes, the guys like Bill Bernstein and Doug Bennett, who rarely get credit for keeping this team upright during this season and giving them energy, knowing when to push, knowing when to back off, knowing when to, you know, what kind of treatment is needed to keep the guys at their best to play. That's a pretty darn good tweet. Appreciate it. And yeah, want to know, win the day. That's Bill Burniston.
Yep.
So we've got a couple more, and I'll get to them for you right now. But one, when I say a couple, is from Ed Tech Kaniac. That's Ross. And as you know, when I say we have a couple more, that means he sent us like seven questions consecutively, even though he just labels them as four. So are you ready?
Rapid fire.
Let's just shoot right through this. Which players do you think have taken their game to a much different level just within this season? So compare January 21st through April 21st only. What's different? What's behind that progress? Which team outside of the Central do you believe is the most like the Canes in terms of strategy and gameplay? And if the Canes meet them in the playoffs, it'll be tough tobogganing. Excellent work there. Like the team, both of you have almost no downtime. What are you doing to relax during this intense stretch? Has the pace been good because it's so incredibly busy? Hope we are all staying well and hydrated. That was three. He ended it there and then gave us a fourth. Finally, has there been an update about the players and will they be vaccinated? It seems like there's such a variability. In reaction to the second shot, timing could be tricky with such a compressed schedule. And do you think seating at PNC will return to normal for the playoffs? All right, let's work backwards. No, seating will not return to normal for the playoffs because the country is still in the middle of a pandemic and now there's other strains coming into it. Again, I'm not playing a doctor, but that's why. Update on the vaccines for the players. I will turn to you on that one, Michael Smith.
Yeah, there have been there have been some that have had, I don't know who's had two and who's had just one, but the team is yes, very much in the process of getting the second vaccine. I am 2 weeks removed from my second shot today.
Oh, so welcome to the fully vaccinated land, my friend.
I am ready to go.
As well you should be. Which team outside of the Central do we believe is most like the Canes? You've already answered that, but it'll bear repeating because I agree with you. It's the Colorado Avalanche.
Yep.
And it will be tough tobogganing. Well done by Ross on that one.
But it'll be entertaining tobogganing.
Oh, yes, it will be. And you won't want to wear that on your head. See my point there. And like I said, Ross with four tweets, but like seven questions. And we don't mind this, by the way. It's well done. They're well crafted. Which players do we think have taken their game to a much different level just this season? Marty Natchez.
Yeah. And I think it's not that it's a different level for Nino Niederreiter, but he's rediscovered the level that he had in 2019 when he was acquired by the Hurricanes. So he kind of rediscovered that form.
And what's behind that? I think it's simple. Sometimes it's hard to explain, but it's confidence. Confident for Marty Natchez to believe that he can do it, go out and do it, and then it starts happening, and then opportunity for him. And then the same thing with Nino. Just the confidence. You know, you see the puck go in the net a few times. You get that belief back. You know, my shot is really good. I'm going to trust it more. I'm going to do these things. That's how it got to it. The other question that he asked was more for us, Michael. What are you doing to relax during this intense stretch? Well, I know one of us will be getting a suntan today and the other one will be preparing for the Florida Panthers tomorrow.
Yeah. On the video portion of the podcast, it's very sunny in my hotel room.
Yes.
Because the beach is right. It's right there.
Yeah. You keep pointing at that. I can point to my coffee maker and a cat.
Well, I have, one of those things. And it's not
you got a cat in your hotel room? Wow.
No.
The road has changed since I have not been on it.
At least not that I know of.
All right. Well, that's good. This Todd McGee asked, and I want to research this one, but I want to say yes. Has a team ever scored an empty net goal and wound up losing? And I mean legit empty net goal, not when a player knocks the puck into his own goal during a delayed penalty sequence. I want to say, yeah, there has to have been a time where a team scores an empty net goal, which would put them up two goals, but the other team comes back to tie it and then maybe win the game in overtime. It's had to have happened.
Probably.
Although it's funny because last night, on Tuesday night, or two nights ago, or depending on whenever you are listening to episode 172 of Canescast, the Pittsburgh Penguins gave up six goals in the third period and still won the game. And that's the first time that ever happened in NHL history.
That stat is hilarious that that previously teams that gave up five or more goals in the third period of a game were 0, 270, and 0. Not even overtime loss.
Yep.
and Pittsburgh ended up winning.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, they
I love that stat. That's so such a good stat.
Chris Greenlee asks,
I don't know him.
Well, I do. So okay. We'll get this out there. I need your take on the Super League. It's not happening, right? Way to go. Way to go, soccer.
I'm blissfully unaware of everything Super League.
All I know is a bunch of American guys who own, you know, teams over in Europe for football wanted to create a Super League so they could make like $5 billion a piece. And I'm not exaggerating when I say $5 billion a piece for their teams, and everybody lost their mind. So they're not doing it now.
No, I would, if I would also want to make $5 billion.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, if you're not thinking about doing that, why would you? There was also an email and a tweet earlier about places to eat against Bill Burniston. And we really haven't, the last few Canes casts, Michael, we haven't gone out of our lane.
We've stayed right in our lane.
So, but I don't want to get Bill mad at us. There was a really good compliment for Bill. So I think we're going to keep that right exactly where it was. You all right with that?
All right.
Okay.
And we haven't really, I mean, there's not been a chance to really experience much on the road this season. So
that's true. Oh, Patrick Foley asks us, how do you guys decide who to talk to in between periods? Is there an actual discussion with someone on the bench, or do players know if they score or if they have a good period, they may be interviewed? The latter. If players know if they score a goal or if they're having a good period, that they're probably going to be tabbed. It's when they're walking off of the bench into the locker room. The Canes PR staff of the great Mike Sundheim and the great Michael Brown, their job is to tell someone, okay, the TV folks want to interview you. So here's a towel, here's a water, and turn back around and go talk to the camera. But yep. It's actually
exactly how it happens.
It's actually kind of decided by the producer of the game. He's the one who has the ultimate call on which player we're going to talk to. So there you go.
Yeah. I have no say in it.
No. Solving all of life's mysteries. You do have say though in post game. If yes. There's a player you want to talk to.
Yes. Yep.
So,
but I have no control over the TV broadcast. I've tried, but my mutiny has failed every single time.
I want you to. I have tried covertly to help you, but it never happens. So
yeah, maybe one day.
All right. Well, that's a good place for us to leave this.
Excellent.
Michael, go enjoy your day off. It is an off day for the Carolina Hurricanes here on this Wednesday, if you're listening to it. But the Canes cast never sleeps or never it has doesn't. An off day. We're here it for doesn't. You all the time. And again, if people want to leave us a voice message, how can they do that?
They can give us a call, 919-500-7819. We're standing by, and by we, I mean a voice recording sure. of us, is standing by 24/7 to greet you and to prompt you for your question or your comment for the show. It's a simple number. It's 919-500-7819, and the best part is it's toll-free.
Absolutely. I know that you love to let people know it's toll-free, and
yeah.
It is us standing by. You'll hear our voice, and you can call literally any time of the day or night and leave your message. But we will recommend you do what the two callers to this fine episode of Canes Cast did. Give us 5 stars, best friends for life. And then yep. We can all go out when everything gets really back to normal and enjoy a Storm Brew brought to you by R&D Brewing. Storm Brew, the official beverage and sponsor of Canes Cast. It's just 97 calories. 2.4 carbs, and it's crispy. And as the weather gets warmer, it is a perfect beverage to enjoy responsibly amongst friends, family, mowing the lawn, or after you're done mowing the lawn, because maybe you don't want to have a Storm Brew while you're mowing the lawn and you want to concentrate on making your yard well, which, by the way, somebody is mowing their lawn in my neighborhood. So if you've heard that during this episode, I apologize.
Maybe they're enjoying a Storm Brew as well. And well, if not, they should be.
If they are, one, why didn't they invite me to enjoy it with them? And two, who's mowing their lawn this early in the morning on a Wednesday with a Storm Brew?
That's true. Yeah, both good points.
I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair question.
That'll do it for this episode of Canes Cast. For the web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you next week.
Moi, moi.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this podcast.
Go Canes.